Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
If I had known I was going to say this hundreds of times, I would have probably suggested something a little bit easier to say.
No.
Really?
It's a nice
maybe.
Verbal challenge.
Maybe. How are you guys doing? Welcome back.
Doing pretty good.
Welcome.
Where have we been?
Norm
went to the edge of the galaxy.
He went to Batu.
That's right. It's the planet. Adam, it's the planet Batu in the Outer Rim, where the influence of the First Order has not yet spread.
I see.
So, yes, this whole past week I was in Orlando, Florida.
Okay.
And actually wonderful weather. I know.
In D.C. on Tuesday. It was 60 degrees.
Yeah. East Coast is doing all this. Very windy in San Francisco coming in, though.
Yeah.
Yesterday morning, coming back from coffee, heading north on Valencia, I had trouble moving forward on the one wheel
because of the
strength of the wind.
Wow. Our power went out because of the wind.
In Pacifica.
Never happens.
Really?
I mean, usually they turn off because they're afraid the PG&E is going to burn down the But this time it was just the wind blew up a tree over a power line.
Wow.
Yeah.
But in Orlando, they are known for their attractions and their theme parks, their theme parks, and there's Walt Disney World. So that's where I spent all 5 days last week visiting the four parks of Disney World, including Hollywood Studios, which now has Galaxy's Edge.
Wow.
Colloquially known as Star Wars Land. Hollywood Studios is one of the parks, the four parks.
Is that where Tower Terror used to be?
It is where Tower Terror still is.
It used to be called MGM Studios, right?
Hollywood Studios is the movie-centric theme park in Walt Disney World that has a Tower of Terror. It has
Muppets.
Muppets, I believe, are there as well. A lot of incredible stuff. Toy Story Land. Yeah, it's pretty good. Okay. And Galaxy's Edge, if you're curious about it, is every bit as amazing as everyone who's gone has
said. Have you not been yet?
I've been to one in L.A. And you know what? They're almost exactly the same.
Are they almost identical?
I will say that the L.A. one, even though there's less square footage in Disneyland, because they basically took a parking lot outside Disneyland and turned it into Galaxy's Edge, because it wraps around the top of the park, it feels a little bit more expansive. I think they stretched it out a little bit more in L.A., they're both amazing places.
So I have a business taking me to Orlando in the next couple of months, and I'm certainly planning to head over to Galaxy's Edge. I've got to go do it.
You could also do the big hotel thing they're opening up in like 2 years. You hear about this?
No.
they have so much space.
Hold on. Can I pitch this?
Okay, you can pitch it.
Norm, Adam, how do you like cruises?
I like the idea of cruises, so sure about being
on
water.
It's a boat that's just like not being on a boat.
What if you went on a cruise in outer space without ever leaving your hotel?
They're building out a hotel in the Walt Disney World compound.
You know, it's funny. I tried to watch that HBO show with Hugh Laurie, and I just couldn't get into it.
Oh, it's from the creator of Veep.
From the creator of Veep, and there's a lot of that same kind of humor, but it just didn't quite. I'm going to give it more time.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a few more episodes because I love Hugh Laurie. I love Josh Gad. I love everyone in the cast.
Mm-hmm. Boy, do the kids love Josh Gad.
Do they?
I mean, he's Olaf in Frozen.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Okay.
We were sitting watching the
Oscars. Frozen's
last
a big
night.
Thing? Is that?
Yes.
Look, the kids, it's like Tangled, but even better.
Highest grossing animated film of all time.
Really?
Frozen 2, I believe. Disney does not count Lion King as an animated film.
The new one.
They count the new one as.
It's decidedly animated.
It is decided. Yeah, it is. It's the same.
100% animated.
It's photons, electrons going through the systems.
Okay.
My daughter recognized Josh Gad's voice as Olaf while she was sitting on her iPad doing something else while the Academy Awards were on. She's like, "Dad, is that Olaf?" I was like,
"Wow,
yes, it is Olaf."
Wow. Yeah. Hey, the Academy Awards were last night.
Yeah.
Aside from them being, I think, from a watching standpoint, the most boring and least interesting they absolutely were talking about small increments here. But I found last night's to be surpassingly boring. I was really like, I just didn't care. I enjoyed Chris Rock and Steve Martin making some jokes up at the front. I thought some of the speeches were wonderful. And I'm very happy with a lot of the winners last night, actually. But I found the actual broadcast itself, you know what it needs? It needs a host. It needs someone with a point of view.
Like the Maya Rudolph, Kristen Wiig segment was
brilliant.
Really, really funny. But went on like... went on a real long time.
Also, some part of Twitter that I was intersecting with this morning was really upset about that whole bit about how they were somehow insulting people in film. And I'm like, no, they're making fun of people not knowing how... Come on, let's have a joke about some meta-analysis here.
Well, I mean, they did the same thing later with the DP... When Will Ferrell and... I can't remember who he's out with, did the DP nomination.
Right.
Like where they were like...
Oh, sorry, that was... Will Ferrell and Kristen, it wasn't Kristen Wiig.
No. I don't
remember. I didn't see it. I was on an airplane.
Oh.
Anyway.
Sorry, I was mixing up the Maya Rudolph, Kristen Wiig, and Will Ferrell. Yeah,
the Maya Rudolph, Kristen Wiig one was, hey, we can act and we're not comedians. That was genius.
That was really, really good.
Really
sorry.
Good.
And Will Ferrell did the one of like the cinematographers get you the coffee in the morning. That kind of
Yeah.
Thing.
Yeah.
I thought
and
that was
like,
very funny.
And like, The thing I landed on is, like, everybody who cares knows what the cinematographer does. If they had done that for, like, sound editing and sound mixing, then it would have been a bad joke.
Yeah.
But I thought it was okay for, like, everybody knows that the DP is responsible. Like,
yeah.
And congrats to Roger Deakins.
Yeah,
Roger Deakins.
Second Academy Award.
My wife had not seen him win a couple of years ago, and she was like, who is Austin Powers here? And I'm like, yeah, Roger Deakins has all the confidence and charisma.
And he has charm. He's swagger.
Practically, there wasn't a podium, but if there was, he would have put an elbow on it and leaned on it while chatting about.
Yeah.
So I thought the winners were, I thought they did a reasonably good job. Like, I wasn't filled with rage about any of the categories, which is
unusual.
Shout
out to Little Women for not netting. Did Little Women win?
Won Best Costume.
Yeah.
See,
it's a period.
Sure.
Yeah.
But, like, honestly, Best Adapted Screenplay. I love Taika won. I'm so happy about that. I thought that Little Women got a little short shrift because I loved it.
Not even so nominated for Best Director.
Yeah, I know, which is totally messed up because Greta Gerwig will win. At some point.
Yes.
I think that's pretty clear.
Yes.
Yeah.
But holy shit.
Yeah.
Bong
Norm, you were right.
I was
you
right.
Norm, is, not
you call
more right. Norm.
Well, the Academy tweeted out its own predictions and they were right too. Did
they
you see
said
this?
He's going to win both the foreign language. Oh.
This was it was such a bad thing that happened on Twitter. It was a week ago. The Academy opened up this whole form that you could fill out online for your predictions. And it generates a little scorecard for like what you think for your bingo night.
Yeah.
And somehow, one of the submissions someone else put in, or so they say, was tweeted out as by the Academy Twitter account as my Oscar predictions. Mm. So the Academy's Oscar predictions were tweeted out with Parasite as Best Picture, and people were freaking out.
Yeah.
I don't envy the poor soul at the Academy who had to manage the aftermath of this.
Yeah.
But that's freaking hilarious.
Well, yes. Presumably
that was definitely their worst day.
Yeah.
But that's really funny. But
presumably the accountants are handling, like, presumably nobody at the Academy knows.
No. No one at the Academy knows.
It's handled by whatever. It's not Pricewaterhouse. No, not anymore.
Oh, it's not?
No, they sacked them after the Warren Beatty, after they gave them the wrong
they
envelope.
They sacked the executives, but not Pricewaterhouse.
I thought
PwC was gone after that. I don't know. I could be wrong.
Could be.
Accounting talk. Inside,
Roger Sterling's
inside
got
accounting.
That account now.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man, if only. Can you imagine what a train wreck Roger Sterling run? Anyway.
Parasite.
Dude.
Movie's real good.
You know, I think it is so well-deserved for that movie to win everything that it won and more. We talked about it just last week, but holy shit, what a thrilling ride. I have never watched a movie in which I was so thrilled by the plot and what the characters would do. It has some of the most efficient character building I've ever seen in a movie. Because I kind of, like, I'm on board with everyone immediately.
Yeah.
As soon as you meet them, they're doing incredible storytelling.
And we know the whole Oscar race is political in the sense that there's
the
lobbying and there's relationship building and it is voters in the Academy, which they select the members of the Academy.
We know that there's problematic things going on that people don't watch all the movies and they,
but there, this seemed to be a win where no one was outraged. Everyone felt like it deserved to win.
That's true. Oh, excuse me. Sorry. I didn't mean to yawn on camera. I hope I didn't make you yawn. Yawning is contagious. If you're yawning right now, I apologize. Now a bunch of people are yawning.
Remember that time Adam Savage made you yawn?
I did it. I used the force. Yes, the outrage for this Oscars happened when the nominations were announced because of Oscars So White.
I mean, which continues
still,
to be
still
a thing.
Ends up being a real problem for them. However, yes, I think there was a lot of well-deserved awards. I thought the score, the woman who won for best score was...
For Joker.
Again, still haven't seen that movie. I know I need to see it. But I thought her speech was adorable, and the degree to which she was surprised and delighted was infectious.
I was making dinner during that one, unfortunately. Oh. The thing I loved was that when every time Bong Joon-ho came up to accept an award, he clearly was thinking, oh, this is the last time I'm going to be up here tonight. And like each time was surprised, and it was so nice because he's been making movies for what, 15 years now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like a long time.
And you can watch them on Netflix. Snowpiercer, yeah. Okja, which Netflix paid for, and all worth watching. Memories of Murder.
Yep. Memories of Murder is the one I've been seeing on Twitter today that a lot of people are tweeting. If you liked Parasite, see Memories of Murder. And so that's next on my list.
Best part about this Parasite winning isn't just that Bong Joon-ho gets the recognition he deserves, but also the South Korean film industry as a whole. Because there are so many amazing South Korean films out there that
people
have been championing.
This is what I've been finding out. And Twitter this morning is a whole education in South Korean cinema, including the fact that South Koreans seem to really enjoy films that bend and break genre boundaries all over the place. So that they have like horror comedy, police procedurals, and all sorts of like, this sounds great. So I have this list that I gathered from Twitter just while surfing this morning of a bunch of stuff to check out.
Mother, Old Boy. Mm-hmm. I saw The Devil, The Good, The Bad, The Weird.
The Good, The Bad, The Weird. That was a title that came across this morning.
That is so good.
Is it really?
So good. Yeah.
I assume that right now throughout Hollywood, there are executive assistants and associate producers collecting all the Korean movies that they can watch as quickly as possible.
And find out how quickly they can purchase the U.S. rights
to
them.
To remake, unfortunately. Yeah. Not just to redistribute, but
absolutely. And then there'll be, so like 2 years from now, there'll be some amazing ones, and then there'll be some real bottom feeders, I'm sure.
The fast follows are going to be ugly. Yeah.
On Lifetime this week,
Brad Pitt won Best Supporting Male. Did a lovely, like, hey, I can't, thanks to Ridley and Gina Davis for giving me a shot early
that
on.
That actually got me teared up. Well, that was really beautiful.
For Thelma Louise.
Yeah, because really, that was such a breakout moment for him and so well carried and still, like, I just watched Thelma and Louise a couple years ago and it holds the hell up.
Well, I was talking about this with Gina after we were watching the show. I was like, I think Brad Pitt is the first actor that I like went and saw a movie in the theater for the first thing. I was like, oh, the guy that was in one scene that could have just been the pretty boy and you would have never thought about again was actually really good.
Yeah.
And then, you know, who knew?
Legends of the Fall.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what you're talking about, right?
Well, I was talking about Thelma and Louise.
Hearing a conversation that Brad Pitt and Matt Damon had while on the set of Ocean's 11. And I think it was that one of the Bourne movies was coming out. Something was coming out that Damon was the lead face of the franchise. And he said he was nervous about it. And Brad Pitt goes, try taking down a studio. Which apparently Legends of the Fall, when Legends of the Fall tanked, it took the studio that made it with it.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know.
And then he did Fight Club and everything was all right.
Dude, yeah. I mean, look, you know, I'm a huge fan of Brad Pitt's. I know a lot of people that have worked with him in LA over the years. And what I've heard from almost every one of them is you may not love his acting in every film, but like Tom Cruise, you've rarely worked with anyone who busts their ass more to make a thing good. Yeah. That he is a tremendous acting partner and super generous with his time and his energy. And that speaks a lot of good to a person for me.
Especially somebody who's been working for that long.
It's funny, he's the best part of both Ad Astra and he's my favorite part of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, right? Like, I think that he gives the nuanced performance that carries both of those films to the degree that I liked them. And I had problems with both of those movies. Mm. But I thought he was stellar in each.
You guys should both still watch 1917.
I'm dying to see 1917. It's one film I haven't gotten a screener for.
Yeah.
Oh.
And if it's still in theaters, find an opportunity to watch it.
I want to.
I would have been happy if that film won as well.
It feels like a weird year for a war movie to win. I know it's not exactly a war movie, but...
Yeah, it's a war movie.
Yeah.
It's a war movie. I mean, it did win for best cinematography.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it could have won for editing, too, because that's a film where editors like, oh, that's a nice hidden cut.
The editor,
nice
too.
Right? They roll it again every morning first thing.
There's a really good podcast I listened to where they interviewed the editor, and that's exactly the number one question. Like, what did the editor do on 1917? And they had to construct the film linearly as they shot it because they had to make the choices of those, what are 50-something takes.
So they shot it completely in order?
As much as they could in order.
Yeah.
So that the take they chose from end of the shooting day is what they led with to roll into the next take for next scene.
That's bananas.
Next shot. And then they still say the timeline has way more edits than you would assume.
Huh. Really?
It's hidden in. Yeah.
Nice. Huh. Yeah. I'm super psyched about that.
Taika Waititi, like, holy cow. Like, you and a couple of friends of mine had recommended that I watch Hunt for the Wilder People years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just like, how is this movie, how is this person not just making as many movies as humanly possible?
Right, right. That just slay you.
It's such a different voice and it's something completely unexpected.
Well, what we believe in the shadows.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. And Thor Ragnarok, honestly, Thor Ragnarok still is the number one watched Marvel movie in my house.
Yeah. No, it's stunning.
Yeah.
Before we continue on with the show, I want to let you know that support for Still Untitled comes this week from Microsoft Surface, introducing the new Microsoft Surface Laptop 3. With its beautiful touchscreen, you'll experience stunning graphics with razor-sharp resolution. Now available with a 13.5 or 15-inch screen. And with the latest processors, there's no project the Surface Laptop can't handle. It's both light and powerful, so you can get more done on the go. Visit surface.com/laptop3 to learn more. That's surface.com/laptop3. Now back to the show. While I was gone last week, you guys did a recording of the first episode of your book club. You
had Matt Parker here. We have Matt Parker from Number File here.
Oh, and the video is out, where you can watch right now on the channel. But tell me about interacting with Matt.
Well, so Matt Parker of Number File fame and also Stand Up Maths fame is a mathematician enthusiast. Who's written a wonderful book that's been out in the UK for a while called Humble Pie, P-I. Mm. And it's just been released in the US. It's the first book of my book club. And it's a terrific book. It's basically how maths can go wrong in the real world. So it starts with the decimal point that screwed a NASA mission.
Beagle.
And goes to all these amazing stories of tiny little ways in which, you know, the counting by zero error can lead to amazing unintended consequences. And it's terrific. And Matt is a wonderful ambassador for the landscape that is mathematics. Because any one of us who was raised in a public school system was raised to believe that math is this grueling slog to suffer through while you're trying not to fall asleep. And that it is this intense acreage of facts to memorize by the test on Tuesday. And what Numberphile and people like Matt Parker, Brady Heron, and others have taught me is that mathematics is this amazing field of knowledge in which there are tons of mysteries, and that just calculating pi, figuring out new and different ways to calculate pi, can unpack the most bizarre things you've ever imagined. Like throwing needles at a grid is one way to calculate pi.
Really?
Yeah. Yep. Take parallel lines that are 1 inch apart.
Yeah.
Now, take a bunch of 1 inch long needles and throw them at this grid of parallel lines that are 1 inch apart. And the percentage between the needles that are touching the lines and the needles that aren't will slowly get to the value of pi.
Why?
Because the simulation's broken.
No, it's actually because of, if you think about each of those needles describing a radius from one edge to its completion, the ways in which those radii intersect with the parallel lines describes a sine curve eventually over time as you count more and more needles.
I still think it's the simulation. You can tell me this all you want, but
so. It was delightful. Matt has become a pal, and we had Brady Heron on the podcast just a few weeks ago. And I love, look, I'm a serial enthusiast, so I love when someone is able to show me the depth of why something's even more interesting than I thought it was, right? When we find out something like, oh, did you know the drive shaft of ships is a really weird science that no one understands, that, you know, is way deeper than you thought? Like, take me there. And number file in mathematics has been that for the last couple of years. And like I've said on this one, the podcast before, but my wife has actually leaned over to me while we're co-surfing and watching stuff in bed together. She's watching something, I'm watching something. She'll turn around to me and go, are you actually getting choked up about what looks like a geometry video? And I'm like, yes, geometry is really beautiful.
And that wasn't the last thing that you guys did together. So there will be more to come.
Oh, wait, there's more?
There will be more to come on the site. Ooh. You just have to wait just a little bit.
Huh. Yeah. Hey, is it? Oh, I guess I got a spam call from Pennsylvania.
Huh. They got to solve that problem.
Yeah. Sorry, I touched it. It was vibrating.
This is a video that we'll be releasing eventually, but you do projects over the weekend. And there was a project you did over this weekend. Was it this weekend?
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little about that?
Well, I want to not give away.
Okay.
So there is an entire class of objects that I make. And I've only just realized the degree to, let's see. Look, when I have an object that I really love, I sometimes make a case for that object. It was, in fact, the very first of all the one-day builds,
yeah.
The case I made for the Blade Runner blaster. Mm-hmm. That was not the first case I made for an object I loved, but it started me on a path of really workshopping these cases until they felt like they were part of the universe that I wanted the object to take me to.
The microscope case.
And the
Winston case, frankly.
The Winston case, the Chewbacca mask case, which I don't know that I've ever actually done a show and tell.
I don't think we have.
So we're going to do some show and tell soon of these cases because I realize I have an entire art show here called Vessel, which is when I love something like this Chewbacca mask that Tom Spina and his craftspeople made that is crazy accurate. I made a case that displays it in the way that I feel befits its import to me, but also the case feels like it's part of the Star Wars universe, and I designed it that way.
It feels like maybe an Empire guy might display that.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I realize it's almost a trophy case, and that's, again, I'm sorry we're describing this in the abstract. We will do a show-and-tell video. We'll shoot it today of this case, so it goes up soon. But what I did over the weekend is I came in and made a case for a costume I'm wearing very soon.
Ooh.
And this was I'll do it like this. I'll have this costume. This was a commission that came in, and we'll release a few videos about this very soon. But the costume is beautiful, and it's not just beautiful, and it doesn't just look like the one from the film, but it feels substantively great. And so I kept on thinking, it's a superhero costume, and I kept on thinking, well, what would the superhero store
their costume
in? Like, that's a genuine question. You never see the case.
Like, you see the comedian's closet in Watchmen, but you don't see, and you see where his costume is stored.
And we know Tony Stark's is stored in nanotechnology that ignores the conservation of mass, but that's fine.
Well, but, or in the Hall of Armors, yeah.
Or the Hall of Armors, yes.
Yeah.
But as far as, like, I am traveling, I'm Scott Lang, where does Ant-Man's, what is the case that Ant-Man's suit goes in?
I think Scott Lang just wears it underneath his normal clothes because he's a dork.
But
that's a fun brief for any prop designer.
Yeah.
So on this particular costume is the longest I've ever spent trying to figure out what the case should look like. And eventually I found an old a shipping case that felt right. And then I had the costume in there for a while, and then I had a better idea about this case, so I modified it. And again, we'll shoot the show and tell about it. Go up at the end of the month. You'll get to see what I'm talking about. This is a long way of saying that we realized in the tested Monday morning meeting this morning that I come in and do a lot of stuff on the weekends, just like if I have a few hours, and we rarely talk about it on the cast or on the channel because I don't cover it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, lately I've been shooting more time lapses and we'll do some more. I guess they're not quite one day builds, but they're slightly more than show and tells, and you'll get to see what I do on a random Sunday.
Ooh.
Was that a little too abstract for everybody?
That's perfect.
Adam's Random Sunday, coming soon.
ARS for you. Yeah. It was a good, it was a nice weekend. It was quiet. And the wind was freaking crazy yesterday in San Francisco.
Yeah.
What is up with that? Do you have like trees blow down?
We had, our power went out. Just to be clear, Northern California, the power has gone out at my house maybe three times in 10 years. And two of them were when PG&E turned off the power because they were afraid they were going to burn down the state.
Yeah. So it still didn't help them not burn down the state.
But look, that's a whole other that's a politics podcast for another day. Yeah, it was like we were going to go for a bike ride and we got out and we're like, no, it's too windy.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
No, I was riding back from coffee yesterday morning on the one wheel and I was moving at about the one wheel can go up to like 15 miles an hour on a random street.
It's a little scary, yeah.
I was going at like 3 miles an hour because I was pushing against the wind and that was as fast as I could go.
Do you have to like duck down and lean in when you're leaning your shoulder?
I try not to do that because then I'm like leaning way forward and that puts me in a state where I could easily be knocked off.
Yeah.
You try not to get too rigid on the one wheel because then it'll pop you right off.
Stay floppy.
Yeah. God, imagine if you had the thing that we're going to show this Thursday as a build related to Spot. I'm just going to go as abstract. Wow.
It's
and
all
as
abstract
teasing.
Segues
yes,
for Dorm.
Yes. Yeah, and that is actually going up this Thursday. So the next Spot project.
That's the cool thing, right?
Yes. Incredibly cool thing. And that is also another project where, because of the complexity of the thing that needed to be built, a lot of it was done on weekends and in time lapse. And so we're finding interesting ways to show that.
Oh my God, this build for Spot that is going up on Thursday. I was so ecstatic about it. I would go home every night and oogle pictures on my phone of the build.
Is this the one that I came in and was like, and I think everybody else that hit the door was like, where the hell are you going to store this thing?
Everyone. Yeah, everyone. Okay. We put it in storage yesterday.
Yeah, that's great. People love this kind of oblique references to upcoming content. It's their favorite. I have a concrete piece of content I can recommend.
Yes. Thank you.
We recorded a new tech pod last week. And we plan to sit down and rank Windows's, talk about the history of Windows from Windows 3.1 to the and only got halfway there in the time that we had allotted. But the first episode is up now at techpod.content.town. And you can hear what we feel about the like 90s and early 2000s Windows's.
Nice.
And the other part comes next week.
I finished a book yesterday, Walter Isaacson's biography of the Wright brothers.
Ooh.
If you like making stuff, when I'm assuming you're listening to this podcast, because you do, read about the Wright brothers, because holy hell, there's so many facts about the Wright brothers that are so much better than anything I had ever learned before. Like,
for example?
Okay. Here's one. Kitty Hawk. They went to Kitty Hawk for the wind. Right?
Yeah, they wanted onshore wind.
They wanted lots of sand. They wanted lots of headwind so that they could get the lift they needed without speed, right? They needed to experiment. Well, Kitty Hawk, when they went there, was so remote. Most of the population of Kitty Hawk were descendants of shipwreck survivors.
Oh, my.
That's how far from civilization Kitty Hawk was.
Wow.
Right?
That's the kind of context I didn't know I wanted.
I know. I read that and I'm like, how did I not know this fact
before?
Well,
they rode the train to someplace in Virginia, like Newport News or something.
Yeah, and then they took like a 2-day sailboat ride to get to Kitty Hawk.
Wow.
Yes. It's the Outer Banks. It's way the hell out there. And I went and looked at it on Google Earth. It's a full-blown town city now with people and museums, of course, like that. But back then, it was like there was like a few dozen people there and they were way out at the bleeding edge of,
wow,
you know, manifest destiny and all that.
Good wind.
Yeah. Good. Oh. Just for the good wind.
as good as the Muybridge biography?
No. Rebecca Solnit's Muybridge book, not River of Dreams, but Rebecca Solnit's book about Muybridge is one of the best books on technology and biography I've read in decades.
Yeah.
Walter Isaacson is a reliably terrific writer, and the Wright brothers biography is wonderful. And the other thing that's really amazing is they were unequivocally the first, and their documentation was fantastic. But a tipping point was happening in culture right then.
Yeah, it seemed
like it's important to realize that they did their first flight in like. Basically, within 3 months of their first flight, someone had crossed the English Channel on a fundamentally different plane.
Mm.
Like, that's how close the whole world was to getting it. And they figured out a kind of a key aspect of control and made it really extant, and it sort of opened these floodgates.
Well, that stuff, that has happened so many times through history. Like, if you look at the invention of calculus with Newton and, I want to say Leibniz, but it's...
It is Leibniz.
Leibniz, yeah.
The invention of the camera happens four completely different parts of the world in the same couple of years.
Yeah.
In four different processes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there are a lot of technological aspects like that. So it's fascinating to read about the international camaraderie between the enthusiasts of this field, from France to England to the United States, and how quickly everyone took what the Wright brothers did and ran with it.
Were they writing letters? Like, obviously, they didn't have like Yahoo groups or something.
They were writing letters back and forth.
Wow.
Furiously.
Like lots of math.
The collected letters of the Wright brothers is massive. I also that's the next thing I'm reading is a book of that, of just their correspondence. Because they also separated and did demos in two separate countries at the same time. Like, that's also kind of mind-blowing.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, terrific book on the Wright brothers.
Well, what a time to be alive right now. For no reason.
Norm, I have a Batu question for you.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. Did you engage... So, one of the things that is both most fascinating...
Did you drink the blue milk? Is that what you're going to ask?
No. We know it's not milk, Adam. The thing that is interesting to me about Batu is that Disney has the world of technology at their hand, and rather than try to build like automated characters that people can interact with, they were just like, we're just paying a bunch of people to walk around in character and engage with the audience. Like,
I didn't do a lot of that character interaction.
Okay.
You can get the app, and there are hidden layers of the world that you can reveal if you have the time, if you want to spend your whole day there. And we know people who've done that.
Yeah.
And the promise is they will have droids and robots that will walk around.
But no cosplaying.
But no formal cosplaying.
For adults.
You can do what's called Disney bounding, which is the practice of near cosplay. You have regular attire, but maybe in the color scheme.
Is there a day in the year that you can cosplay?
I believe you can pay for a special Halloween trick-or-treating night, and you can take the kids trick-or-treating down Main Street, and then you can cosplay during.
I bet if you ask nicely, you could probably cosplay.
They're not going to escort you off.
Yeah. We have friends who went in close enough to Star Wars costume that they had to get inspected by the costume person on the way into the world.
Wow.
And they were like, this belt buckle is a little too close. If you take the belt off, you're good.
Wow.
Well, he was wearing like a Han Solo belt buckle. So it was, But right. It's arbitrary.
Six-sided polygon.
Yeah.
River of Shadows is Rebecca Solnit's book about Edvard Muybridge and the invention of cinema. And it's a stunning bit of cultural work. It's a fundamentally different kind of biography, but really worth reading if you're wondering. Okay. And it's a pretty quick read.
What color lightsabers did you get, Norm?
I didn't buy a lightsaber.
What?
What?
No,
what?
I have a better one at home than I could get at Disneyland.
Wow.
You could wait in a long line and pay $125, $140 for like a Kylo Ren lightsaber. That's really not nearly as good as what you would get on the RPF or Etsy.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. All right.
There's a lot of markup. A lot of Disney markup.
Okay. Right. Yeah. Okay.
I'm dying to go.
We'll find a way. Life will find a way to get you in a Galaxy's Edge, even if it means staying at a themed non-cruise hotel.
Space cruise.
Yeah.
Stop. They're going to just hire Will to say it like that
space
as you walk in.
Space cruise.
I don't know if we'll have a podcast next week. We might, but it might be on location somewhere because we're doing a little bit of traveling, international travel. I think we're not embargoed to say that. We're visiting some of our best friends.
We should do a tally up of how many different international locations we've traveled to, because Joey and I have been to the corners of the world together.
You went to Australia. You went to New Zealand. You went to
London.
London.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, so four things.
I've been to the Arctic with Joey.
Oh, yeah, Joey went to the Arctic. That's
there's
five.
That, too.
Yeah. You went to CERN?
That's yeah, France. Six. Oh, yeah.
Is that kind of one or two?
Yeah.
World travelers all here at Tested.
Yeah, stay tuned. A lot of good stuff. A lot of good stuff coming up is the most I'll say right now.
Well, thanks for joining us, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
See you next week.
Go watch Parasite.
Yes, watch Parasite. Enjoy.
Let's go.
Oh, yeah, I have to do
Let's
that.
Let's go. I didn't realize that Hamilton quoted West Wing.
Where?
Looking for a mind at work. Is a line that Sam Seaborn says in a season four episode.
Wow. I'm looking for a mind at work.
Wow.
Work. Uh-huh. Interesting.
Yeah. Sam Norman Seaborn.
Is that his middle name?
That is his middle name on the show.
Wow. All right, let's start.